Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is award-winning author, poet, musician, Adam Stemple. And tonight we're talking about his How to Write Fantasy Novels books. Adam, welcome back to the show. It's such a pleasure to talk to you again.
I'm thrilled to be back.
This was a really interesting series of books that you wrote, and I want to just list them for the audience. Volume 1 is Getting Started. Volume 2 is The First Draft. Volume 3 is Revising, which I happen to love, by the way. I love revising. Volume 4, Getting Published. And Volume 5, Self-Publishing. But it's all geared to the fantasy writer. What really inspired you to write these books?
It just came to be that time. I think there's a time in every writer's life where they want to try and, you know, pass down what, for lack of a better word, what wisdom they've learned about the craft of writing, and see if I could, pass on some of the hard lessons I've learned through, I published my first book, which was I did the music for it, but I've been in the publishing business and writing since, 16 years old.
Now, you come from a writing family.
Very much so.
It's like you come from a very unusual situation.
Yeah, possibly more so than you know, because
I'm sure.
My grandfather was a writer. Mother is a quite famous children's book writer.
And we should give out her name, because Jane Yolen.
Yep.
She's wicked way famous.
And from Massachusetts.
Yep.
West of Worcester.
From the Valley.
From the Valley.
Ho, ho, ho.
But then also, you know how a lot of kids have little journals or diaries when they're 9 years old? Well, mine came back to me the next morning, edited in red pen with a prompt for the next day's journal entry.
Dude, wait a minute, Adam, is that true?
100%. I call it.
Oh, my God.
My Skinnerist training in the art of writing.
Oh my God. You know, that's actually more true than funny.
<It's> Yes, 100%. Well, it explains why I write, when I first started writing, I was already writing with a great deal of ease, and also explains why I avoided writing for a great long time.
Yeah, I totally get that. I totally get that. Now, you have a number of fiction books, a number of fantasy books. Your first solo effort was Singer of Souls, which won awards. As a person, I write book reviews for ornithology journals. That's the extent of my writing. But I've been doing it for decades. But you got to tell me about the decision to write fantasy. That seems like a great leap. And you've had lots of other work experience. But what really sort of pushed you to go, I'm going to write, but what I'm going to write is fantasy?
It's really what I'm steeped in. I grew up reading fantasy. When I moved out to Minneapolis, I was to be a musician and to join a band, but I happened to join a band with two fantasy authors in it, Stephen Bruce and Emma Bull.
Oh, wow.
So Stephen's a best-selling fantasy author, and Emma Bull wrote one of the seminal works of urban fiction, War for the Oaks. Huh. So I'm writing songs with them, reading their books, talking with them about writing. Grew up with writers, and fantasy was a natural choice for me.
It actually sounds like you were doomed to be a fantasy writer.
Yeah, I prefer the word fated, but doomed words.
You were cursed. It was like it's like something out of a fantasy novel. So your first novel, and we're not talking about your recommendations in the book after all your experiences, but what was the toughest thing to get started for you?
For me, it was very interesting. There's a couple stories around it. For one, I was writing the book, and I had already written a novel with my mother, Pay the Piper.
Oh, yep.
Which was very, very much a master's class in finishing a book, because you know, she's always been supportive of writing, and I'd send her writing, and she'd give it a look over, give me notes and stuff. But once you're working together, it's very different. There's no more notes and critiques. There's just a rewrite and back to you. So instead of, you know, getting a critique, I looked at what she changed of my prose.
Oh, wow.
And then tried to clean it up for the next pass myself. And by the end of that book, the last kind of epilogue, I wrote all on my own, and it went in the book unchanged. So that felt really good. But in writing Singer of Souls, I was, I had gotten about three or four chapters in and then was completely stuck. And I was talking it through with my mother, and I said, you know, I'm writing it, and I'm writing it in two kind of frames of view, one doing the backstory and this and that, kind of a complicated structure. And then I was blocked. And my mother, in very guru-like fashion, said, have you tried starting at the beginning and telling it through to the end?
Huh.
And that actually fixed the whole thing. And I started the book, you know, much earlier than I had in the time frame of the book, and told the story through to the end. So that was my first spot of trouble that I got through.
The second one was
actually led kind of directly to the books we're talking about today, about how to write fantasy. Was because I had a literary agent named Marilyn Marlowe, and she was very old school, original battle axe literary agent. And I was talking to her, at, you know, just about the process, and she said to me, "Oh, you're just learning how you write."
When I read that in the book, that was like another one of those pearls of wisdom that actually makes total sense.
Exactly. And that really led to my whole kind of theory on teaching people to write is you don't learn to write, you learn how you write. So when I try and disseminate information, I talk about how I write, but more importantly, I talk about why I write that way and what I'm trying to accomplish. Because every writer will devise a different path and find a path to that that works better for them.
Is that blockage a really common experience for fiction writers?
Yeah.
It would seem to me like in every single project, you would have to hit one of those roadblocks at least once in every project.
Generally the middle. I mean, and you read about that in the
in the
second book, the dreaded middle. The middle of a book is always.
Why is the middle so like scary?
Well, actually, I was on a panel with Wesley Chu a few months back, and he had the best explanation for it ever. I thought it was just absolutely brilliant. He said, at the beginning of the book, you're asking a lot of questions, and that's really fun, and you don't have to be that responsible. You don't have to worry about that stuff, because even if you don't know the answer, you say, I'll answer it later. You're asking all these questions, you're having a lot of fun, you're exploring stuff, and then you get into the middle, and you haven't answered many of the questions yet, and you're not asking any more questions, you're just trying to figure stuff out. Even if you know what it is, you're still trying to get to the point where you're answering the questions. Because answering questions is satisfying, and it's interesting, and you're wrapping stuff up, and that's the end of the book, and plus you got the end is like a tired horse smelling the barn. You know, you just go for it. But the middle, you're not asking questions. You can't answer them yet, and you're just slogging.
It would seem to me, as an outsider, that you probably have conceived of the end of the book anyways in your head, and the beginning. So you've already thought about this is going to happen, and this is how it's going to finish, and it's getting from point A to point Z. That's the problem.
Yeah. You are not wrong. It is not always the case. Not always. You don't always have the. Not every author has the end in mind when they start. I usually do, but I haven't always. And usually, when I have the end in mind, by the time I get there, I find it isn't actually the end.
There's a phrase that you use in the book. I think it's really hilarious. Pantsers versus plotters. You got to explain those two things.
I did not make those up. Those are actually pretty common phrases in the writing world.
What?
And that is, pantsers are people who fly by the seat of their pants, and plotters are the ones who plot things out. It's basically people who outline and people who don't.
So it's like storyboarding, yep. In other words?
Yep.
That would be a plotter.
Yep. That would be a plotter, and most of us plotters do no storyboarding because many writers cannot draw. So a written outline.
Well, I meant a written. Yeah. But pantsers, pantsers really fascinate me because there are literally people who just sit down at the word processor and go, I'm going to start, and then bzzz to the end and just figure it out as they go along.
And some of them have written nearly 450 books, Jane Yolen being one of them. She is downright allergic to plotting.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight, always a pleasure to talk to him, is award-winning author, poet, and musician, Adam Stemple. And we're talking about, he's written a series of how-to books of how to write fantasy novels, and we're talking about Getting Started, which is the first volume in that series. I want to talk about some of the points you bring up in the book, and if to the listener it sounds obvious, it's not obvious all the time to the person who's writing. And I love the fact that before you can write fantasy, you have to make sure you can write. And that may sound obvious as hell, but I know a lot of people who attempt to write stuff and have no idea if they can write.
Writing is hard.
It is. I mean, I write nonfiction reviews, and you would think that would be a breeze. It's absolutely not.
Writing is hard, and it's tricksy because everyone thinks they can write. Because we use language every day, we talk every day, and it's different. And there are some things you really need to learn to make it easier on yourself.
Like grammar.
Yes, like grammar. And additionally, the hard part about any arts is both that they can all be taught, but there is also a natural talent element in all of them that just makes it easier for some. Mm-hmm. And it's really unfair, but it is there. Now, it's easy to spot in things like painting and music. It's very difficult to recognize in writing. But I have found that some people just have a natural sense for the rhythm of language.
Right.
And
is part of that having read a lot, does reading a lot actually make you a better writer?
Reading a lot definitely makes you a better writer. I don't know if it lends itself to the natural talent, because I've seen it in kids who have, obviously not read that much, but as soon as they start writing, you can see in their prose, even the very young prose, that they understand the rhythm of the language.
Is this creative aspect of writing like the creative aspect in music?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's an old samurai saying that says all arts are the same, whether it's swordplay, flower arranging, poetry. And I apply that to the modern arts of writing and music and drawing. Mm-hmm. There was I gathered my thoughts for a second. There was a teacher of drawing. I took graphic design in college for a brief time, and he said that great art of any kind contains three things at a high level: concept, composition, and technique. And he was talking about drawing, but I realized that he was talking about all the arts.
Mm.
And so once you learn composition and concept at a high level in any of these arts, you can really transfer that to the next one. And the technique is the one that you have to start at ground zero at.
Yeah.
But the le- lucky thing is that technique is the easiest thing to teach. Huh. It's more difficult in writing because there's no physical element to writing, which I think makes it very unique among the arts. So there's nothing to fall back on. If your brain's not really into it that day, you've got no technique to fall back on. As a musician, I can play a song at any time, and whether I'm quote unquote feeling it or not, to the observer, it will have very little effect. Whereas writing, if you're not feeling it, it's hard to achieve anything.
Oh, I can vouch for that.
Yeah. Yeah, and even nonfiction writing, a 300-word essay can stop you cold.
There's nothing like constipation. Not in the right spot. There's nothing like cerebral constipation when you're trying to write. You can't do it.
It's the worst. It's the worst, and there's so many distractions. I write. It's funny. I can write 500 to 1,000 words a day at home, but boy, if we're taking a road trip in the car with nothing else to do on the laptop, no internet connection, an hour or two long drive with my wife driving, I'll write 3,000-4,000 words.
Wow. Now, one of the things you suggest in the book, and a lot of people may not be familiar with this who are thinking about starting writing, is to join a writer's group. First, explain what that is, and then talk about how you might find one.
A writer's group is a group of writers who get together either occasionally or on a regular schedule. It depends on the group. I've been in both, ones that meet when someone has a novel to critique and ones that meet every 2 weeks. My mother, once a week, with 450 books. But a writer's group is a group of writers who get together and critique each other's work. And that's all it is reading other people's works and giving them notes on it.
But how do you
get in your work and getting notes on it?
Are these open to to new members though, or are they all a self sort of forming group? Like you have to know somebody in order to get into one of these writers groups?
Not necessarily. There's a bunch of them online. You can join ones online, either small ones, big ones. You don't have to meet in person. During COVID, my current group all met over Zoom. But there's giant ones with thousands of members that you can post your things to. Now, that to me sounds quite daunting. But for some people, the anonymity works very well for them. There's lots of options. I prefer finding a like-minded group of people.
So in other words, other fantasy writers, other people who are writing fantasy.
Here's the thing. The less experienced you are, the more important it is that your group be genre compatible, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to be less sophisticated critiquers. Critiquing is a skill, and it's one that you'll learn over time, both to give it and receive it. Because it can be hard to receive criticism.
Well, if people have never done that before, have never been critiqued, it can be an experience.
It can be really hard. I had a story that I knew my group was going to rip apart. And my oldest child, who now has an MFA in creative writing, was a baby writer at that point, just getting started. 14, 15 or something. And I asked my group if they could come. They said, sure. And I said, you want to come see dad get critiqued?
Oh, God.
And they're like, yeah. And so I came and had him watch as my story got ripped apart and watch me say, thanks for your notes and stuff like that. And how you have to, be able to get through this in what can be very emotional. You pour your heart and soul into a story and have people tell you it's crap. Is really tough. But if you got the right group, they're usually right. And then you can improve the story. My writers groups have improved my writing immeasurably.
Huh.
And also I've been able to be there and critique and help mold stories and novels that have won Hugo Awards, won Nebula Awards, been nominated for National Book Awards. It's really exciting when a story you've had some tiny hand in, to have a writer thank you in their speech. You know, it's super fun.
But there's a good way to critique and a bad way. And in your book, the first volume, you actually have suggestions on how to critique. In other words, suppose you find somebody in your group who just seems to have it out for you or out for the genre. That's why, I imagine you have to run across people who are just really not good at critiquing.
Yes. And the number one thing to remember is that if it's not kind, it's not critique. It's just bullying.
That makes sense.
That is the most important thing, because it's hard enough to hear this stuff. If you hear it from someone who's just being mean about it, then it's impossible to glean anything good out of it, even if they're making good points. So both as a critiquer and as a critiquee, you must be kind. And the other thing about genre appropriateness is it's very difficult for beginning critiquers to distinguish between taste and technique.
Huh.
Is the story bad, or do you just not like it? And that can often be genre. I've got writers in my group, which is an absolute murderer's row of prose. I'm very lucky to be in it. But there are writers in my group who don't read horror and don't like horror.
Okay.
I write a fair amount of horror.
Right. Your stories are dark.
These writers squint their eyes, ignore the fact that they don't like the genre, and critique the story and critique the technique and critique the characters, the arc, and all the stuff that is universal throughout whatever genre you're writing, and ignore the fact that they don't even like the story because of the content. It's a difficult skill.
Now, there's a phrase you use in the book, dare to suck. You got to elaborate on that.
Well, I got that from my dear departed friend who was a music engineer, and I recorded and produced probably 35 albums with him over the years. And he would always say, before you go in to try and lay down your first track, he would say, dare to suck, which just means let go, man. Let go of that inner editor. Let go of the critiquer. Let go of the person who's telling you you're not good enough. And just write. Just play. Just go do it. And the beauty of writing and also, you know, recording music is you can always do it over.
Right.
And the revision process is a beautiful thing. And when people are reading the book, they don't need to know how many times you had to try and write it to get it right. Or how many times at the end you go, oh, that doesn't work. I have to go fix the whole beginning and rewrite the whole beginning. To them, it just comes out seamless, like you meant to do it that way the first time. So dare to suck is how you should start every first draft. And again, this is how I write. And the reason that we say dare to suck is that you can't edit a blank page. It can be very hard to just start writing. Some people write very clean first copy, and maybe you're one of the people who really needs to plot everything out, plan everything out, and not put a word down until you have everything in your mind cleanly. But that's very rare. More often, you're just going to want to dare to suck.
Well, for me, writing, even though I'm just writing a review, I'm trying to make it an interesting and entertaining review. I often have to convince myself to do that, to get it something down on paper, and then you can clean it up afterwards and then rethink
exactly.
It. But it's often you have to get it out of your head and on paper in order to do that and move along. Otherwise, it's just in your head getting all like, I should do this, I should do this, I should do this, and that never works. It stalls you out.
And my mother wrote a poem, which is great. And the line is, we actually turned it into a song in my first band way back in 1987,
Oy.
Which I swear was just 10, 15 years ago. And the line is, I dreamed an eagle, but it was a hummingbird I brought forth or created or wrote down or whatever. And people get very frustrated because they have these amazing thoughts And then they write it down, and it just goes, it just lies there on the page. And what you have to understand is that writing will never encompass fully that dream you had, that glorious thought in your mind of how this story, this book was going to be. And it's because thoughts exist in eight dimensions. You know, that you can see it, you can hear it, you can feel it, you can smell it, you can, there's more to it. It enlivens your mind, and then you write it down, and it's just in this poor little medium of words. But you have to embrace that and remember that this thought, this idea you had, since your writing will only get the tiniest sliver of that, you can use that same impetus and idea to inspire dozens of writings, short stories, novels, poems. You can use it over and over again and birth all these tiny, glorious little hummingbirds. It'll never be that magnificent eagle that you dreamed of, but it's still beautiful and wonderful in its own way.
Yeah, it's not a starling. It's a hummingbird.
No, yes. Try not to put out invasive species.
We went a little
niche bird watching there for a second.
I had to.
Yeah, that's fair.
We're completely out of time, and we've only scratched the surface of the first book, and I want to recommend these books to people. They're small books. They're easy to digest, but there is an awful lot of advice and recommendations and ideas on how to proceed, how to get started. And I recommend them strongly. And we'll probably have Adam back to talk about other aspects like getting published. My returning guest tonight is award-winning author, poet, and musician, Adam Stemple. And tonight we've been talking about his series of books on how to write fantasy novels. Getting Started is the first volume, second volume, the first draft, third, revising, fourth, getting published, that's huge, and volume five is self-publishing. Adam, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me again. This is so much fun.
I did too. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.